So how did you get your start originally, and get us up to date on where you're at now?
Yeah, excuse me, bit of a cough over here. We don't get as good a summers as you guys. That's what you think. How we came to be, I suppose, we've gone a couple of years now. Myself and Tim, the singer, we kind of hooked up a while back, four or five years ago at this stage, just kind of through the Dublin music scene. We got together and then kind of hit it off as friends, and then it kind of went on the back burner for a bit. You know, we continued to be friends, and Tim showed me some of his ideas, songwriting wise, and then it got put on hold for a while, until we kind of met up again later on. We met some more guys, got a decent guitarist, the dreaded fellow over here, Jonesy. He came in as well, introduced some of his styles, and then once we kind of found a sound, then we found that we were friends first and foremost. You know, we then started to look at the music aspect, and then it took off from there. So I suppose the current lineup, the newest addition is the keys player and the new guitarist as well. That kind of really formed the sound that we are now. It's kind of a friendship that involves music as well. You know, we do believe that you have to enjoy what you do and enjoy it with the people you're in the band with, you know, and that really reflects in the music and the songs and the album, and especially rock. That's where our head's at, you know.
That's basically the best type of band to be in, I think. That, I mean, you guys all have the same type of vision, and it drives you closer as musicians and as friends as well.
I mean, I was just thinking about this the other day. If you look at the bands that have really lasted, you know, the U2s and the Rolling Stones and those type of guys. I mean, the Bon Jovis, those dudes, above everything else, are good friends. You know, they respect each other, that they get along, they're great friends. And I think that's a very key and a very important aspect of the band, is you have to enjoy it. Friends and guys in the group, because I mean, if you go on tour, you're around for 20, 30 years, you're seeing the guys every day, you're in the same room, you're traveling on planes and cars, you know, you're on stage, and you have to enjoy that time. Otherwise, that's what a lot of bands just don't make, and I think that's where we really are, you know, true to ourselves. We're good friends, and we make good music as well, you know.
Yeah, and a good example of that, you brought up U2. I read an article recently where the rest of the band was at Bono's father's funeral.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. I mean, there's loads of cases as well. If you go into the darker side of rock and roll, where guys have been there for each other in different circumstances, you know, whether it be through addictions or through anything like that. The guys, the bands that stand the test of time, the guys who are there for each other as friends first and foremost, and great music comes as a result of that friendship and that trust and that respect, you know.
Exactly. Well, let's talk about how you guys have been doing this year in 2015, because I'm simply amazed at some of your accomplishments, like signing to a US-based label, and I mean you're working with, you know, Bob Cutarella, who's a Grammy award-winning producer.
Yeah, well, actually, what actually happened was, Brian, about actually near the end of 2014, we released a single here in Ireland called Across the World, and it actually became we became as a result of that song alone, we became the most played independent band in Irish radio at the time for 2014, for the whole year on that song alone. We were very, very lucky with that, you know. And ever since then, really, it's kind of been nonstop, you know. Since that kind of accolade, if you call it, it kind of came around with Perfection Records kind of signing us up there in California, and the management company, and yeah, it's been nonstop. And as I said, with our first UK release for Rocket coming up actually next week, we're absolutely over the moon for that. So to answer your question actually about Bob Cutarella, Bob is a very, very talented person. He's a legend in the music scene. And he really did a lot of work really for us, to kind of really, how to say, mold us really into the outfit that we kind of are now. I think before we met Bob, we were very, how to say, of course, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed comes to mind, but we were also very naive. Like, we went to when we were recording with Bob, we went to a studio called Grouch Lodge, which is a very, very kind of very big studio there in Ireland. And they got the swimming pools, they got the bars, they got this massive studio, they got the saunas and everything. And at the time, in the beginning, we were just like, oh, I can't wait to hit the sauna, hit the jacuzzi after my part, you know, after I played my bit or something. So so it was at that time, it was in the beginning of doing it, it was more fun than doing it.
There was a fantastic story, Brian, about Michael Jackson had lived down at Grouse Lodge for about maybe, I think it was about a 6 month period back in, was 2006, I think it was. And so the studio owner had all these amazing Michael Jackson stories, and we were there with Bob, and Bob had actually done a bit of work with Michael Jackson as well. So these two guys are bouncing around Michael Jackson stories. Oh, did you hear about the time he did this? And there was this amazing time when Michael Jackson said this and this. And we were there at the time. We were about maybe 22. And we were kind of going, oh my God, these guys are crazy.
Yeah.
These stories, these rock and roll stories from the road, from touring. Like, oh my God, that's incredible.
Taking it all in. But I said, like, during that time, like, Bob really did kind of do a lot to help us mold and help us understand what we have to do to take that to the next level. And we're very grateful for that.
Now, you've been kind of lucky with that, with getting people like Bob. And then you also are working with... Phil, I can never pronounce his last name right, but Phil Quartararo.
Phil Quartararo. It's very
Quartararo.
We did an interview there a few weeks ago, and it was a UK, like an English newspaper, and they called him Phil Quattrocanto, like it sounds like a car.
Oh wow!
like a Fiat Quattrocanto or something. Like, oh my God, it was hilarious.
Like something Ferrari would put out or something.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, he's nobody small either. He's the co-founder of Virgin Records.
Yeah, he is. Yeah.
You know, do you find stuff like that to be extremely lucky to work with people like Bob and Phil, and you know, do they kind of take the mentor role in a way?
No, they take the mentor role, and in a way, as you know, when they manage us, you know, they don't micromanage, you know, so they would lay out a big goal on, we'll say, a macro level, like, guys, we need a killer album. But then they would never step in and say, oh, well, we need the song to be 3 minutes, 32 seconds, or whatever. They would never, you know, manage on the micro level. They would, you know, allow us a lot of creativity. They would never step in.
Yeah,
they would never step in and say, oh, hey, well, we need your press release to read like this, or we need, you know, micro levels, like, you know, you have to wear this kind of shade of color, or nothing like that. It's very high level, you know, macro level management, which is allows us a lot of creative freedom, so we're very, very happy with that. You know,
that was good.
So they're not going to come. So they don't come in and say, "Okay, I need a new song, and here's the chord progression."
Oh no!
I don't think they know what chords are. They sound like me. I'm a drummer. I don't do chords. Always say to the guys, "It's like it doesn't sound happy enough." You know, can we?
Yeah,
it needs more happy. What's happy? I don't know. It's just,
you know what I think's funny? See, I have a musician background myself. I play guitar, and every band I've been in, we've always had one manager or one producer that's come in and has tried to tell the drummer something, but none of them have been drummers, and they'll try to start beatboxing. Like, I need something like this.
That's an excuse for drumming. Yeah.
It's a beatboxing king.
Beatboxing is a brilliant technique to write music.
Nice.
Michael Jackson did it. They have some kind of rough videos on YouTube, I think it is, of Michael Jackson showing everyone beat it, I think it is.
Yeah, when he's in court.
And he starts off with the beatbox, and it's brilliant. I try and show Brendan, and Brendan just laughs at me because I'm really bad at it.
Yeah, you're talking about when somebody sued him for plagiarism and he did the cool thing. Yeah, when he was on the witness stand and everything.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. I saw that. I was blown away because he never did anything like that on his records.
Yeah. Well, that's, again, it's brilliant because, again, like it's kind of how he set the... Because there was nobody else that could have the ideas for him, but him, of course, and maybe Toto at times. But he kind of set that foundation really, really well, you know, and then he built on it, which I'm a fan of that kind of technique-ish for writing music anyway, so
if you remember on the second bar, while he's beatboxing, he starts humming the bass line.
Yeah, yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
I was blown away by that. That guy, we heard probably 10% of his talent on record.
I agree.
You know, but how, let me, well, let's talk about your talent. this year, or last year actually, you guys were most played indie act on Irish radio. How did that come about?
Yeah, well, it came about quite a bit of a surprise. We were very over the moon for it, really. As I said, we wrote our song, released our song on Irish radio called Across the World, kind of a dance song, and we shot the video in Barcelona and did all the kind of stuff. And one of the lead radio groups here in Ireland called UTV, they look after about 7 radio stations across the country, and they selected us as their Irish act for a few months, and because of that we got more radio play than we could imagine, to be honest, and it kind of came from that. And again, from that came Perfection Records and all the stuff on. We're very grateful, you know.
Now, how is Irish radio, like terrestrial, like FM, AM, so on and so forth, to act towards indie acts? Because here in America, it's like the best I've seen are some radio stations, some of the bigger radio stations will say, okay, we will have an unsigned show every Sunday night at 11:30 for 15 minutes. But other than that, it's all playing the same stuff.
No, I think a lot of the majors over here, they do try and, you know, take smaller bands kind of under their wing. Now, I mean, it would be very difficult to get, we'll say, drive time airplay if you're an indie band. But, yeah. I mean, definitely the stations do try to be very, very helpful to the kind of smaller bands. Like when we're tweeting out our songs, for example, Rocket, we'd have DJs kind of say, oh, this is great. I'm going to play this on my show. So it's really, you know, it's quite a, you know, they do try and nurture the young bands.
Yeah. I suppose it's kind of difficult as well when Irish radio, and rightly so, are supporting Irish bands like Codaline and Hosier and The Script, who are internationally as big as almost anyone. So we're competing against those who are technically Irish bands as well, you know.
Yeah.
So it can be interesting at times.
Yeah.
To go there, as Tim was saying about when we've got the most selected, the most played independent band, you know, that's what was so rewarding for us, was the fact that we did that all on our own. You know, we promoted ourselves. The rewards were so sweet, you know, because you put so much effort into it, and to finally see that kind of reward when you're competing against the bigger bands who have label support and big budgets and things like that, you know, it really made it worth our while. And it, you know, kind of at the end of the day, you do get something out of it. So it can be tricky at times, but when it happens, you know, it makes it all the better, I think.
Now, what was that? Now, how easy was it to write Rocket? Because, I mean, it is infectiously catchy. I mean, let's just admit that right now. I mean, if you've heard it once, you've heard it 5, 6, 10 times, because it's, you come back to it. But I mean, as a songwriter myself, I mean, like, first thing I thought after I got, you know, after I got over how catchy it was and the jealousy that I didn't write it, you know, was that like, man, this song was probably freaking hard to write.
It's usually the writing process that we have here for the band is that the guys like are great. They allow me to kind of have a bit of free rein and think of some ideas and bring the ideas to the guys, you know, and tell them exactly kind of when I write the idea, what exactly is in my mind or what exactly I was trying to go for. And because everybody is so good at what they do, you know, it makes my life as a songwriter, as kind of a concept writer, if you call it that, very, very easy, you know. When we wrote Rocket, at the time, we just signed a record deal with Perfection Records, and what I wanted to do was lyrically, firstly, like, cause I wrote the lyrics most of the time anyway, so, but like, lyrically, I wanted to try and, like, wanted to try and really describe that moment or that feeling that we all had, you know, the feeling that we put a lot of effort in, we put a lot of work in, from the kind of, and this is where we're at now, and this is where we're going to be. But also put a secondary message into that, because as you probably know yourself, Brian, everybody has goals, everybody has dreams per se, if you call that, and I wanted to put some kind of bits into that as well, so the listeners that are in the same boat can relate to that as well. So again, it's a kind of, how to say, a double-sided, double meaning, really, double wording, you know, words are two meanings and general sentences and innuendos and stuff like that. So that's kind of how it worked. But to be honest, like the lyrics, that once when I kind of come up with ideas for lyrics, if I'm overfilled with emotion, like over the moon about this, I have no problem writing it. But it's bringing to the guys. Like what I would say is, I'm totally gonna give Jonesy and Brendan big egos. I can bring an idea to Brendan and I can say, listen, I want a kind of a hip hop kind of a vibe to this. Like Brendan is such a versatile drummer and is kind of specifically, I'm a huge fan of his hip hop style playing. And once he kind of lays down a very strong beat, Jonesy on the bass can really kind of really vibe with that and really lock into that and be in on that day from the when writing it day one, he's in the pocket straight away and really building a really strong backbone for us to add the texture parts like the synths and the guitars and stuff like that as well. It really, like, it's a song that really kind of complements the vocals in a great way, you know,
Now, you guys seem like the type of songwriters that, you know, you always have a notepad in your back pocket, you know, because, like, you could be at McDonald's or something with an Egg McMuffin and all of a sudden, like, boom, it's like, you know, four verses right there.
Oh, guys, here comes an idea.
Right? Yep, exactly. Well, I'm kind of the same way. I gotta take a mine acoustic in the bathroom. You know, so you never know when inspiration's gonna drop, man, along with something else. You know, but I mean, like, but you guys seem like you're the firemen of songwriters. You're always at the ready.
Yeah. Well, you never know when inspiration's gonna hit. You could be in
and
the
bathroom. You never remember it either. It's like, I've got this killer idea.
It's gone.
And I'll remember it tomorrow morning when you get some sleep now and you wake up. Don't, where's it gone? You know?
I love that
memory.
I love that Kanye West line. He goes, I forgot better shit than you ever thought of. That to me just sums up being an artist. You got all these great ideas and you remember like 9 out of 10 of them. Yeah. One out of 10, sorry.
Shia LaBeouf said something about that too. He kind of like emphasized, but he said it different. He's like, I've shit stuff that that's more than you've ever thought of or something like that. But I think he was wasted, but anyway.
Was that by any chance? Was that the time when he was half naked in Central Park doing the rap?
Yeah, with the Transformer, where he dissed Transformers and stuff. You know what's funny? He disses Transformers, and that thing made him. I mean, he should show some respect to it, you know? Because now he's, like, he'd be lucky to get a GoBots movie, you know? So.
There's a great video, actually, on YouTube. I don't know, like, total tangent. There's a great video on YouTube about him. He's very famous for, like going... No, 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 no.
Oh, yeah.
About 20 times in, I think, the trilogy or the two movies at least, he goes, no, 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 no. And there are different ways of saying it. So they put a video, like a montage on the whole thing. Absolutely brilliant.
He actually does that in Indiana Jones, too.
Yeah, he does.
Right before the magic monkeys, you know, like come out and help him, and it looks totally believable, and you know, actually looked like they were trying to come up with a video game idea when they did that.
Yeah.
You know, but I mean, you know, what's funny? You could just see Harrison Ford cashing that check in his mind the whole movie.
Yeah.
You know,
everyone apart from Harrison.
Yeah.
Yep. Exactly. Well, let me ask you this: what is your live show like? I mean, what can we expect when we go to the Jupy show?
This is a Tim question.
Oh!
This is a Tim question.
Okay, so you got lasers.
No way.
Dozen bikinis.
Cheerleaders.
Well, you guys are like Pink Floyd live or something.
Yeah,
like
you got a big hammers.
You got a whole heap load of twerking. You know, like you got to have the twerking. You know. No. What we try and do is, I think the we love, man. You know, I like on one side we always say, like, you know, writing and recording and releasing is one thing, you know, but gigging is completely different. You know, and it gives us the opportunity to turn a song or a single like Rocket that's 3.5 minutes into a 6-minute song. You know, because we can do the big intros, the big outros, the solos. You know, and really, to be honest, I think, and as a musician, you probably did know this yourself. When you're kind of writing for a single. On one side, you'd love to put loads of stuff in that song that shows how good the band are as musicians. But as the song as a whole, it kind of restricts you a little bit. But what you pretty much do is you save those awesome ideas really for the live show. You know, you go, right, listen, do you remember that idea you had that we couldn't really get the green light on from management? Then, well, put it on the live show. Yeah. What I would say is two words that sum up the live show: stadium status. That's it for us.
So you guys really have lasers?
No, unfortunately not. We can get them.
That'd be cool. That'd be, because, like, I mean, like, nothing, I mean, shit, that's, like, better than anything, man. You know, especially when you, like, point them forward and it freaks everybody out. You know? But, well, what is your crowd like? I mean, because, I mean, I could picture you guys, I mean, I could picture anybody 18 to 80, like, showing up at your show. Because, I mean, I think there's that much of an appeal for what I've heard so far.
Well, like, we try and make sure that the set is as kind of hard-hitting slash groovy, groovy as possible. Because our general sound is that we've got a very good groove, you know, to the sound, thanks to Jonesy and Brendan really kind of knocking that off. I think really the thing about it, we have a wide range of kind of fans, you know, that ranges from the younger kind of 16, 18s to the 25, 30, 40s. A great example of it, you know, we did our first UK show there in the beginning of July in London, and it was our first time in the UK doing a show before the UK release, and we were excited, very excited, but also kind of nervous as well, because it was our first show.
We thought nobody was going to come.
We thought no one was going to turn up, you know, and lo and behold, we literally walked out after having food, and the place was absolutely packed. There was queues out the door. You know, and we were absolutely so excited and so pumped to see a big crowd. And for our first time in the UK, they made us feel so at home.
Yeah.
And the energy and the kind of the love and the response they were giving to us during the show was absolutely amazing. And of course, we vibe off that so much, you know. So the more energy we can get off the crowd, the more we can work with. You know what I mean? So,
Oh, yeah. It's like yin and yang, man. The more you give, the more you get, and right back at you. So, well, where else have you guys played? I mean, what's the most exotic place you've played?
Well, I mean, we filmed that music video in... Jameson thing. We filmed our music video in Barcelona. Now, unfortunately, we didn't actually play there, but that was incredible. Brendan was going to say there that we played the Jameson Global Broadcast, which was a live stream across 120 radio stations live on air, us playing literally across the world.
Yeah. And that was with Mumford and Sons as well. Actually, they kind of did a bit of a surprise entry as well. We had like a stripped back acoustic set, and then they came on after us and wired everyone for 4 or 5 songs. So that's probably our biggest one today. Well, it was a small intimate gig, but it was a kind of, you know, a good example of kind of
a crazy day.
Yeah. Drinking whiskey and playing tunes with Mumford and Sons on Paddy's Day. That sums it up.
I think it's one of those things you can say, like, oh, so how's your band doing? Well, you know, today we were getting drunk on whiskey and drinking by a woman's office.
Yeah, it was live in the Jameson Distillery on St. Patrick's Day in Dublin, so you can imagine the kind of magic.
Oh, man. Crazy. That place, that was probably wild too, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, now, what was it like? What was it like playing with Toto? Because those guys are like legends.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Yeah, awesome, yeah. Very cool.
It was the there was a really cool venue in Dublin called the Sugar Club, and it was the lead singer from Toto, a guy called Bobby Kimball. You know, see all the videos, the Rosanna video, he's the guy with the killer mustache. And he still rocks that mustache, and he has still got it. He has still got the voice. They sound checked Africa, you know. We're like, oh my god, like, that's their sound check. It's this. These guys are going to tear the roof off the place. But yeah, no, it was great, great band. It was a killer gig, actually. Mm-hmm. Such a nice guy, humble guy. He was hanging out with us after the show, asking for all our kind of stories. It was great.
That was early days, and he compared us to Stevie Wonder, which is like, what? Yeah, he said, wow. Stevie Wonder music. I'm like, thank you so much, dude.
Man, see, as a guitarist myself, I'm a big fan of Steve Lukather.
You've got a Steve Lukather lookalike, don't you think? Check it out.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, without the goatee and the mustache, man.
I can't draw a goatee, but I'm working on it.
Well, but no, he's an amazing guitarist, man. I mean, I put him up there with like Eddie Van Halen or something.
Yeah, they're actually really good friends, him and Van Halen.
They are, yeah.
They're like best friends,
Him and Brent Mason are the top two recorded guitar players of all time. Everything's incredible.
Yep, exactly. So I mean, what was it like? I mean, like, 'cause they're like, I mean, Mumford and Sons are legends in their own right, but Toto, I mean, they're like the godfathers of rock, or like one of them anyway. Like, I would put them in the same group as like Yes and Journey.
Definitely.
Yeah.
You know. So, I mean, were you guys, is it kind of humbling to like be like with them on stage?
Yeah, we were, to be honest, we were all huge fans of what they do, you know. I think every 5 minutes, I think each of us had our own individual moment where we wanted to pinch ourselves, you know, while we were playing. You know, it was an absolute honor to even share the stage with it, like, you know, share the stage for the show, you know, and like, again, it was such a humble thing. It was one of those, I think it was one of those days where you wake up the next day and go, holy crap, did that just happen? You know, like, did that happen last night?
Yeah, it kind of hits home when you're doing a sound check and suddenly, like, Bobby Kimball's head turns back and kind of looks at you while you're doing a sound check, and like, yeah, did I do something wrong? Yeah. Or is he interested? Smile or do something. Just don't look at me like
it's like yeah. Totally. I don't know, Brian, if you do gigging yourself there in Chicago, like, but I don't know if you've ever been in a position, I think we all have been in our own, this in the time when you're doing your sound check, all right, or you're doing a show or something, and there's always one guy or two guys in the audience, okay, that are kind of like, even say for example during a sound check, that are eyeing you up because they're standing there and they're crossing their arms.
Yeah.
and you know they're musicians and they're not there to watch and enjoy, they're there to go, okay, what's that guy doing? So you can imagine Bobby Kimball at the very end of the room like this with his, I don't know if you can see me on your camera, but like this.
Oh yeah, I can see it.
This, like, at the very end,
there's a moustache, yeah, looking at you.
Because the Sugar Club was like, it's like a, I wouldn't say an amphitheater, but it kind of goes slanted upwards. So at the very, very back of the room, and like it's with the lights, you kind of peer over. You see this very black goatee going on, and like Kimball with the glasses on in the dark room indoors, yeah, crossing his arms, going, "Oh God, oh God!"
I know he's almost like a living silhouette.
Oh yeah, because he's wearing black, all black, like, you know, as well. Oh.
And talk about pressure. When we were playing right before Mumford and Sons, see those guys. Aside from, you know, being incredible musicians,
it's their voices.
The first song that they played when they came on was it was an a cappella four-way vocal harmony, and you're kind of going, God damn it! And, you know, so on top of being, you know, incredible musicians, you're like, oh jeez, that's pressure, you know, yeah, four-way vocal harmony.
Another whiskey.
And
the,
yeah,
nice. Well, and you know what's funny? I mean, as great a singer and talent as he is, he's one of those guys that when you look at him, like, you wonder if he's pissed. You know, like if he stares at you too long, like, you just start capitulating to whatever you think he's thinking.
Yeah.
You know, but no, I mean, I totally understand what you're thinking. Like, my band back in the 90s, we opened up for Cheap Trick, and my highlight of that was one time the Marquee, they accidentally put our band with Cheap Trick, and I was like, hell yeah. You know, like, on the Marquee, and they changed it right when I pointed it out. They were like, oh, we gotta change that.
Why would you point it out? Why?
I know, because I'm sitting there looking for my camera. You know, I want to take a selfie, like, right next to that, man.
Yeah.
You know, because they opened up for us, you know. You know, before, you know, we got thrown off the tour, too, because we were eating all their food and playing their guitars and stuff when they weren't looking. Yeah. So, because we were like, well, we were kids, you know. So, I think we were too young in hindsight, but oh well. But, well, let's talk about what Jeep's got coming up. What are you guys doing, like, to promote Rocket? It's coming out here next week and everything. I mean, it's obviously going to be big, so.
The big news around Jeep headquarters, as of this morning, actually, was we just got confirmation. Now, this has been kind of, you know, this has been kind of in the process for about maybe 6 weeks or so, but we just got final confirmation just this morning that we are going to be, that we've been added to the bill of the biggest outdoor festival in Ireland. It's called Electric Picnic. And it's been headlined by, it's in Florence and the Machine is there. They got Interpol.
Sam Smith.
It's a big, big festival. And we got to go ahead and start plugging that as of today. So that's been the big, big news.
No, that's great.
As of today.
Oh, that's great. With Rocket coming out in the UK the 3rd of August on iTunes next week. And I'd say, do you know what? I'd say we'll probably get a UK tour in. You know, we're trying to look at Birmingham, Manchester, get back to London again. There's a lot of stuff in the pan, you know. And of course, we're actually heading over to the BBC there end of August as well for some for some interviews as well. So that we just got that again today as well. So to be honest, Brian, you caused it a really, really good time.
Nice, nice. I love it, man. Because like I said, I was telling people this morning, like before, you know, the before I talked to you, that I mean, these guys are on the precipice, man. You know, I mean, you guys are like right on the edge of just blowing the hell up. So you know, like I actually started thinking, oh, we wasted all this time talking to Toto, and you got Florence and the Machine now. So, well, I mean, where can we find you guys online? I mean, because like I said, the single comes out next week. Where can we buy it? I mean, I'm guessing iTunes and Spotify and all that. And
it's going to be on iTunes. It's on pre-order right now. You can get us at Jute Music on Twitter. We're on Facebook, jutemusic.com, Instagram, all the usual suspects. YouTube, yeah. We have a little taster video of Rock It up there before it goes out.
Yeah.
All our other music is up there as well from the album. Twitter, Facebook, you know.
And we'll have all those links in the article as well. So,
great. So thank you.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show, man. I'm really enjoying the single, and I am really going to enjoy watching your career just come to fruition. Just remember us little guys.
That's awesome.
Thanks.